Greetings, Trailblazer fans. Casey Holdall here with Dave Deckard of BlazersEdge.com. It is Thursday, November 5th. We are going to be talking some Trailblazers here on our weekly Trailblazers.com podcast, which, by the way, Dave, I think we still need to come up with a better name than Trailblazers.com podcast, because that's not, I don't know. I'm not really feeling that name right now. We've been at it for a while, and we gotta do something else.
Wow.
I'm not saying you got to recommend anything right now, but that's just something that's been on my mind lately.
Way to throw me curveball with question number one. All right, we'll think of something. Maybe we'll throw it open on the Blazers Edge or something like that, and people come up with something.
There you go. Maybe put it to a vote or something like that. So,
yeah,
so
that always comes up with the best names.
I agree. It's always best to keep it democratic whenever possible, too. So after that, that putting Dave on the spot right away there, we'll kind of talk of Blazers for about a half hour or so today, get to kind of the slow start we've had, talk about some of the issues that are going on. Rotations, Brandon Roy, things like that. For me personally, though, just on an overview note, this is kind of my favorite part of the year because baseball is mercifully over now. NBA basketball is just getting started up. College football is really heating up. So for me, as a sports fan, this is kind of one of my favorite times of year. What about you, Dave? I know you're not much of a football fan per se. I know you're mostly an NBA guy, and I don't know what your Major League Baseball allegiances are, but I know at least for me, I love it when baseball is over.
I like sports. I just don't have time to follow much besides the Blazers, so I tend to keep it down. I can't afford to fall in love with another team. But my favorite time of year is any time the Blazers are on a winning streak. I don't care what time of season it is, although I do have a fondness for the playoffs, of course. So if I was pushed, I'd have to say spring probably, just because the Blazers hopefully make the postseason. Other than that, just let them play.
Absolutely. And, you know, so far through the first start, I don't think this team looks like a team is going to be going to the postseason yet. Obviously, there's still much basketball to be played, but so far I would say that I think that most people have been disappointed with what they've seen so far out of the team, and I don't think that's necessarily, you know, such a awful thing to think. I don't think the team has really been very happy with the way they've played so far, but you know, I think what we've seen from the team is kind of a level of inconsistency that, as you wrote on Blazers Edge today, that I think people were expecting to see last year. When they didn't see it last year, I think they expected not to see it again this year, which I think is a legitimate claim. And lo and behold, here we are at 2-3, and you know, the team hasn't really put together a game yet where you can point to it and say, yeah, you know, that was a really good performance.
Yeah, and more to the point, they haven't beaten anybody who has put on a good performance, which is, you know, the dismaying thing, because it looks like right now the Blazers' victory are dependent on the game of the opponent, which is not where you wanted to see them. That's certainly not a recipe for success in the NBA. But, you know, as we said this morning, if you look at all the things that went on during the preseason and all the changes that have been made, even though it doesn't look like much roster-wise, a lot of individuals are in transition on this team, and probably a little bit of an inconsistent start isn't horribly surprising.
Yeah, it doesn't, like I said, I would have liked to have seen a better start, and I guess I have been a little bit surprised with just the level of difficulty this team is having right now. But the fact that they're starting out a bit slow isn't really much of a surprise to me. I thought we probably would have been scoring a little more than we have so far. I thought that they would have been able to integrate Greg a little better than they have so far. But again, you know, it is five games, and I realize that in the postseason, or not the postseason, but the preseason, you know, some of these same problems were there. So you can really say, you know, maybe it was more like seven or eight games that some of these problems have been occurring. But, you know, I would say it's no reason to get too concerned just yet. But, I mean, if we're kind of, you know, in the middle of November, end of November, and things are still going this way, you know, I think you really got to take a strong look at this team and decide, you know, is this really what we expected, and is this the way we're going to have to try to get through the season, or is there something that's going to have to take place that's going to kind of shake things up? Because right now, it's, you know, there's no flow anywhere. You know, the team doesn't seem to have any kind of real cohesion right now. It is a little off-putting.
Yeah, to me, I guess the leash is a little bit longer. I would give them to maybe January or so. This month, I mean, you got Tough game coming up against San Antonio. You've got a five-game road swing coming up next week. And it just, you know, it's going to take some time with them probably to rectify some of these things. A homely comparison that I have is, you know, we do the band thing every once in a while. Some concerts you go out there and for some reason it isn't clicking, and sometimes that'll happen a time or two in a row. You'll get through your set, but you know it isn't exactly right, and you don't know exactly what's going on. It's not that anybody's technically playing or incorrectly. It's that just the rhythm is off or something else is going on that makes it hard to trust each other, and the music doesn't come out the way you want it to. Sometimes that just takes time and really confidence to resolve, that you go out there, you have a great performance or two, it starts clicking, you get confident again, and it all comes out. It feels to me that this team is in that situation, that little things are going wrong, nothing huge necessarily, but they just don't have confidence and trust in each other.
Absolutely, and I think trust is really what it comes down to right now. It doesn't seem like you said, the team really trusts each other on offense or on defense right now, and you know, maybe that's just a case of, you know, this being one of the first years where everyone didn't get back together and work out for with each other for a month before the season started, and maybe, you know, building some of that trust and that awareness of where guys are going to be at and that expectation that guy is going to have your back. You know, maybe that's just going to take a little bit longer to build this season. Hopefully it won't take too awful long. For me, my analogy is, and I was thinking about this morning, is with Ducks football. I mean, the Ducks football team lost that first game of the season to Boise State, and after that performance, it didn't look like they were going to win five games this season, you know, and they had been written off by most people, and I think probably rightly so, and now they're on the verge, or at least they're the front runner to win the Pac-10 title and to go to the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, if you consider that five games in the NBA is even a shorter time than one game in a college football season, I mean, from that perspective, you can see that there's a lot of chance for things to change. And like you said, Dave, things haven't clicked yet, and hopefully they will. But, you know, eventually that has to happen. You just can't keep on saying, well, it's going to click, it's going to click, it's going to click, and then it doesn't click, you know. And that's I wrote something about that yesterday, that past couple of years there's been a moment in the season where, you know, kind of a big event happened, and everything kind of seemed to fall into place. Last year I think it was, you know, Brandon's shot against Houston in the fifth game of the season. The year before that it was Travis's shot in Memphis that started that 13-game winning streak. And you know, I don't know if they're waiting for something like that to happen, but I was talking to Brandon Roy about that for the piece that I did write, and he was saying, you know, yeah, you know, that's great, and, you know, maybe something like that will happen, but, you know, the good teams can't wait for a moment like that to happen. They already have to come together, you know, through means outside of, you know, a crazy shot or, you know, beating a team that, you know, was maybe the world champions the year before. You know, it has to come from something other than just some kind of fluke. And, you know, for the Trailblazers, if they really do want to become one of those teams that is, you know, an upper echelon team, they can't really go about just keeping their fingers crossed and hoping that something's going to happen that makes things click. They have to make that click happen themselves.
Yeah, and that's why I love him, because he's exactly right about that. That said, there are opportunities ahead for some of those things to go right. The nearest one is the road trip, five games next week, Memphis, Minnesota, New Orleans, Charlotte, Atlanta. Now, three of those games are probably winnable. Two of those games are tough. But if the team can manage to go 4-1 on that trip, that all of a sudden looks like a huge confidence boost. The end of next month, November, you got a homestand, Minnesota, Chicago, New Jersey, Memphis. Those games should be winnable, perhaps with the Golden State game on the road before being winnable as well. That's another five-game stretch where maybe you think about going 5-0 if you play well enough, and that also is a confidence and a record booster. December and January, though, get a little more difficult to sustain any wins, at least any winning streaks. So something probably needs to happen this month to turn around a little bit. Otherwise, boy, this team will have a bit of a hole to dig out of.
Absolutely, and you know, you don't want to leave it to you know, February and March and the beginning of April to get yourself in the playoffs. You really want to have something locked up by then, and then be concerned about your seeding, not so much concerned about actually making the playoffs. So in the Western Conference, it's, well, really, even in the Eastern Conference this year, it's hard to be able to say at any point in time, unless you're way out there, that you're definitely going to make the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think that's a good point, Dave. I think that, you know, this team doesn't necessarily need like that big moment. They just need that stretch. You know, they need like a, you know, 4 wins in 5 games or 5 wins in 5 games, something to kind of give them that confidence into. Not even so. I don't even know if it's an issue of confidence, but just to figure out what rotations are working and how guys are fitting together and what the rotation is going to be going forward, and then stick to that. And that's something that, you know, Nate is going to have to flesh out here in the not too distant future. I'm sure he's working on it right now. But right now, you know, those rotations, I don't. You know, you hear guys in the locker room saying, you know, they're not really sure what their roles are, and you know, they're not really sure what's working with other guys because they're just out there playing right now and they don't have really the time or the wherewithal to figure out, you know, what rotations are working better than others. And, you know, that's something that is really Nate's responsibility, and I'm sure he would claim the same. And, you know, it's really coming down to, you know, he's being tested as a coach right now, I think, to figure out how all these pieces are going to fit together. And, you know, and so far through the first 5 games, I don't think we've really seen that just yet.
Yeah, you know, there's a certain cooperation that has to happen, obviously, between players and coach. And I think Nate's dealing with some things that he hasn't dealt with before with this team. Number one, I think that, spoken or not, there are a few different agendas on the team this year. None of them harmful, none of them all that selfish, but people are human, and people, you know, respond differently to different challenges, and a lot of guys have individual challenges this year that they're trying to meet that may be distracting a little bit from the team. Number two is, I think, the expectations on the team of itself went kind of, it was pretty high. I mean, I really think the team began this season into thinking about playoffs. If you listen to Brandon Roy, I mean, he's used the word championship because he thought we didn't aim high enough last year. All that's well and good, but championships aren't won by looking at them in October, November. They're won by making your rotation, by not going under a screen when you should fight around it, by running the right play at the right time in a little section of the fourth quarter in game number 8 of the season. That's not happening. The players need to refocus on the details, and Nate's job is to get them to do that. Now, he may call it effort, he may call it whatever, but until he can get them to do that, it doesn't matter who he puts in there, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if guys can get over those agendas or picadillos or whatever you want to call it to figure out, you know, what is important to me right now. Is it, you know, is it what I need to do to, you know, get my next contract or to feel like I'm a big enough part of this team, or is it, you know, playing my role and you know, helping this team advance to the playoffs and hopefully something greater. And you know, and that really does fall to Nate. I mean, he's got to figure out where those guys are coming from, and you know, if their motives aren't, you know, altruistic or at least, you know, moving in the right direction, then I mean, then you got to change that behavior or figure out a way to change those minds, because I mean, you can't have, I mean, basically to be a championship team, everyone's got to be focused on the one goal, and that's to win a championship. And you know, the teams that are able to do that have all of their ducks in a row, and they're able to move all in the same direction. And you know, if you have even little things and little agendas or little motivations that aren't, you know, towards that main goal, then I mean, it's not going to work. And you know, I don't know that I've necessarily seen that through the first 5 games, but I mean, there's something there, and I don't think that notion that the guys are you know, maybe not playing the right way for the right reasons is, you know, is a possibility. And like I said, I don't know that's the whole of the problem, but it's definitely possible that's a part of the problem. And you know,
it doesn't take too much. You need to be 100% focused and committed, and even if you're 80, that affects you. And I think as a team, I mean, what this is like weight loss. You set a goal for losing weight, right? And as long as that goal is in front of you, you are viciously committed to it, and you make it. But how how long do you stay at that weight once you've made it? Most people have a period of slipping back and saying, you know, I'm satisfied with myself. Now I did it. It's time to go have a ho-ho. You know, and it feels like the Blazers are having their hostess treats right now. And they're kind of looking at each other and not quite being committed the same way they were to the overall goal. You know, and like, yes, Nate has to settle on a rotation, but there's a chicken and egg thing to that, and that is, you know, who's going to be in that rotation, and who is showing that they should be in that rotation? And right now, there's a long list of people that aren't showing they should be in that rotation, at least not as consistently as they want, and the people who are consistently in it are kind of worrying as much about themselves as they are about solidifying the players around them.
Interesting. Do you think that? I mean, I would have said at the beginning of this at this season, and obviously we're what, a week and a half in, so it shows how wishy-washy I am. But I would have guessed that the rotation, or at least the starting line that we've seen now, would have been kept throughout the majority of the season, if not the whole season. Now, kind of looking at it through these first five games, I don't know. I see there being some kind of shakeup, and I don't. I mean, and really, there's only one place to go with that, and it's Steve Blake and Andre Miller. And I don't think that either Andre or Steve has played well enough to lay claim to that position right now. But it seems like the only position where, you know, a change can be made and the team can change stylistically with one move. And it's hard to tell if that one move is what they need right now to get on the right track. If Miller really isn't happy coming off the bench, which I think kind of, I mean, every player wants to start. So to say he's unhappy coming off the bench might be a little strong, but he would rather be starting. I mean, I don't think that's any kind of mystery to anybody. And, you know, if that's going to change his play to be in that starting rotation, I mean, maybe you do it just for that reason alone, even if it doesn't come down to performance. But that's the only thing about that is that's really not Nate's style. I mean, if you don't show it, Nate's not really the kind of coach that is going to put you in just to, you know, make you feel better about your position on the team. And, you know, I think that Steve is the kind of guy who could definitely come off the bench, but I don't know if that accomplishes what they've wanted to accomplish in that second unit. But, I mean, to be truthfully honest, having Andre Miller in that second unit hasn't really done anything for the second unit either. So at this point, I think you need to maybe focus on that first unit and figure out, you know, what's going to make them the best team possible and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, Nate's in a hard spot here. I mean, Andre Miller shooting 31.6% from the field, 20% from the three-point line. Scoring 8.2 points a game. He's getting rebounds and some assists. He's got a great assist-to-turnover ratio, but, I mean, this is an underperforming start for him. He's not in his comfort zone. He's not playing well. And under normal circumstances, if he was in the starting lineup already, you'd be thinking about moving him out. On the other hand, Steve Blake, 34% from the field, about the only thing he's doing well is shooting the three-point shot. He's at 39% for that. But his assists are, you know, not great. He's not setting the offense. And neither one of them is defending well. What do you do here? It's not even the lesser of two evils. Both evils are a problem right now. So when you shake up from problem to problem, you're kind of grasping at straws, which was what it feels like is going on.
Absolutely, and, you know, hopefully those straws get grabbed. I don't know, but it doesn't. Right now, that, you know, it's not coming together. It's the way that people had expected, and you know, something's got to happen soon, I think. I don't know, and I get the feeling something will happen.
It is. But, you know, to be fair, in the case of Nate has got to have at least a year. You know, without the threat of things hanging over his head in order to work this out. It is a new situation. We need to see what this team does for an entire season. The team started 2-3 last year and ended up with 54 wins. They start 2-3 this year. We need to see what happens. And we need to see if these players are going to get it together as well. And, you know, that takes time. People have been calling for Nate's head in seasons well before this, when he's done nothing but a marvelous job and increased win totals. It was super bogus there. It's kind of a little bit bogus right now. This is a discussion that should be had after the Blazers exit the playoffs next spring, whenever that may be.
Yeah, I've just become so numb to the fire Nate talk that I don't even really consider it a legitimate conversation anymore. And I mean, and you know, it probably should be at some point, but just like you said, after, I mean, it seems like there's been a certain segment of people that have wanted Nate gone since he got the job. So I mean, I have a hard time kind of separating out the rational arguments from the, you know, let's fire Nate because that's what you do, is you fire your coach when the team isn't playing well, regardless of how long that stretch goes. So yeah, I mean I'm trying to be more open to those arguments, because you know, I think that, you know, people have good points to make, but for me it's more filtering out the legitimate arguments from the just kind of off the wall personal grudge against Nate McMillan arguments, which there are a fair amount of as well.
Well, when we said this last year and the year before, actually, that this would be the test year for Nate, that he would have to show something this year, you know, and this would be the first year it would really be fair to critique him fully, because this is the first year he's really got a full roster. But that critique doesn't happen, you know, in week two of the season. That critique happens after the year is over. And the other thing, the one thing I think that we haven't mentioned that people have that they need to be aware of is the mystery option that's better than what's going on. There's always going to be a shuffle. There's always going to be some player sitting on the bench somewhere that supposedly is going to revolutionize this team, or some magic rotation fix or whatever, that's your substitution pattern, as people say, that's going to, you know, fix this team somehow. That usually doesn't exist. Sometimes it does, but it's a lot rarer than people think. The team is what it is. You're seeing its best players right now on the court in whatever combinations they're coming out in. There's not going to be a magic wand to wave that another coach is going to be able to find that is, you know, going to turn this 2-3 start into a 5-0 start. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, they might end up putting me in at coach. So all you people out there hoping for Nate's head, I might be the alternative to Nate, and I don't think you want me out there in a suit trying to point guys in the right direction, because I know next to nothing about basketball. So
a serious pay cut for you, though, wouldn't it?
It would be a pay cut, but you know, if it's for the good of the team, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice. I am fully invested in this team, and I am down for the sacrifice. So if I got to take a pay cut to coach this team, you know, if I have to be on the road 41 games out of the season away from home, you know, I'm willing to. You know, if it's going to bring the city a championship, which, you know, for all my faults, I think my coaching style probably would, you know, that's something I'm willing to do for the fans out there. I'm willing to put my personal life and my professional life and my fiduciary life on hold as long as I can get everyone a championship. So keep that in mind, everybody. Brandon Roy, on the other hand, does know quite a bit about basketball. And I think, you know, when you have a conversation about Steve Blake and Andre Miller, you know, Brandon Roy really has to be kind of the jumping off point in that conversation, because really the way that you mesh with Brandon kind of really determines, you know, what unit you're going to play with. And I guess one that is an argument can be had. Maybe those decisions shouldn't be based so much on Brandon Roy's game, which I mean I think I would argue against, because I think he's the kind of player and the quality of player where you make concessions for you know, suiting him. But so I guess that's the first topic is, do you mold the team around Brandon Roy and make your point guard decision based off of that, or do you look at like Greg Oden and say, you know, Greg is the guy in this team that we need to get going. Brandon's going to be fine. LaMarcus is going to be able to get his, but Greg is the guy that we need to be focused on, and then make your decision at point guard based on that. I mean, I think those are conversations that, you know, we've had in theory throughout the offseason, and now that we've kind of seen how this team is playing together, I mean, maybe we've got a little more evidence to say, yes, you know, it should be Andre because he'd be better with Greg, or no, it shouldn't be Andre because, you know, Brandon Roy is drive and kick style of offense really suits a guy like Steve Blake better than it does a guy like Andre Miller. So, I mean, at this point, I think you have to look at Brandon and one, say, you know, is he playing as well as we expect him to throughout the season? And I would say, one, no, he's not. I think that, you know, Brandon's a guy who, like any player, is going to improve as the season goes on. I think Brandon as well, when his game is so tied into timing, I think he maybe takes a little bit longer than some of the other people in his echelon to get going. But the notion of Brandon Roy and his place on the team and how the team revolves around him or shouldn't revolve around him is definitely a topic that I think is germane to this 2-3 start.
Yeah, well, right now I don't see people having another choice. I mean, if you're going to toss out Brandon Roy as the main factor of this team, you can toss out all the progress that's been made over the last 3 years. For the foreseeable future, Roy is your star. He is the center of attention. He is the guy you make your decisions around. And if and when that changes, that will be a major renovation or deconstruction even of this team. So, you go with that with the caveat that Brandon has to understand that it takes 5 players, not 4, in order to be productive. So he's going to have to help out his point guard as much as his point guard helps out him. Greg Oden, you can't build around right now because he can't stay on the floor. Part of the reason Greg Oden can't stay on the floor is because our backcourt is depending fairly poorly, and our front court rotations aren't covering for it enough. So Oden, although it's not as bad as last year with the obvious fouls, still picks up enough fouls that he can't stay on the floor. So it all fits together. You got to get the guys in there who can defend well enough to keep Oden safer so he can spend longer on the floor, so that he can provide a post presence that opens up the game more for those same perimeter players.
Yeah, and it's really a catch-22 when it comes to Greg as well, because I might be wrong in this kind of theory, but I get the sense that if Greg could score more and if Greg was more a part of the offense early in games, he might be less likely to have fouls called on him by the referees. And that, I don't know, that this is kind of a, maybe an urban myth isn't the right word for it, but just a feeling I get that if you're putting in the number, if you're getting the numbers on the offensive end, if you're a part of the offense, then you're not just that guy standing in the middle on defense that it's easy to blow whistles on. Now, obviously, Dwight Howard, who is probably the best offensive post player in the NBA, fouled out in 17 minutes the other day, so that kind of shoots my theory out of the water. But, you know, I think it is a catch-22 in that, you know, keeping Greg out there, allowing him to be a part of the offense is definitely going to help this team in the long run. But if he can't stay out there on defense, it's not going to matter anyways. But the question I'll put to you though, Dave, is last year, Joel Prisbilla started most games, and I mean, obviously with Nicholas Batum, our perimeter defense was probably better than it was, than it's been so far this year. But I think Martell is kind of getting to the point where he can fill in for there. So how did Prisbilla manage to stay out of foul trouble for the most part last season, while still playing with the same perimeter defenders who, I mean, Do you think the perimeter defenders were better last year, or do you think Prisbilla is just better at avoiding fouls when penetration occurs this year?
I think Prisbilla has more experience at it, although he does get in his fair share of foul trouble, and is this season, by
sure,
the way.
Sure.
He has more experience at it. He has less of a reputation and less of a target on his back. I mean, let's face it, referees are going to be watching Greg Oden. They know who he is and have known ever since he came into the league. He also spent last year collecting fouls like they were Halloween candy. And that sticks with you, as anybody who followed the career of Mark Bryant can tell you. Refs are looking to be able to call a foul on him, not because they're out to get him, as much as, you know, he's obvious and they're used to being in that mode. That's why part of the immediate solution, I mean, hopefully Greg will become better over time and get a better reputation over time. But part of the immediate solution is the team really needs to protect him somewhat more. And, you know, offensively, he's out there, and he is making a difference. I mean, it's kind of like a hornet's nest forms when he touches the ball in the post with some of these teams, and that really does open up some passes or some nice shots for other people. But he can't stay out there long enough to develop enough of a rhythm to get any shots to fall or to get his teammates comfortable with him. So we're not seeing near the potential of his offense that exists.
Yeah, I'm still hoping for what you suggested last week, which was the early Shaquille O'Neal offense for Greg, and I think we saw that a little bit in the Atlanta game, in that usually they'll start the game out by running three or four plays for LaMarcus Aldridge right off the bat. They go to LaMarcus in the post, first three plays, basically you can write it down and take it to the bank. Last game I think they ran at least the first two plays for Greg, and you know I don't recall off the top of my head if he actually scored on him or if he even had a chance to get an attempt, because especially with a team like Atlanta, they're going to double Greg at any opportunity. But you know I think you're really on to something with that, Dave, and you know I don't know how one would go about suggesting it, but I think it was a stroke of genius on your part, and you know, if we can get something going in that direction, maybe some kind of campaign to throw the ball to Greg, you know, 8 feet in the air and just hope that he gets his hands on it. You know, maybe he gets a little loose, gets a couple, you know, plays where he starts feeling it, and you know, maybe the refs take it easy on him for the rest of the game.
They did it. Greg has been running to the rim when he's been coming down a lot more. It's the first place he goes. Of course, he can't stay in there. The Blazers haven't gotten him the ball because it's either been defended or the ball hasn't gotten there yet in some cases. But he's getting more inside. He's getting a little deeper position when he does post up. It looked like at the very beginning, in the first couple games, when he was posting up, he was posting up to a spot rather than to score, and there's a difference. In other words, he was running the play as it was on paper. Here is where I go, here is where I stand, and seal off. Okay, I've got the ball. Now what do I do with it? And he was really too far out, and he hadn't thought past that point, you know, step A. Now it looks like he's posting up a little more aggressively in order to actually follow through and score the ball, make a move. And, you know, I think you're going to see him get more comfortable as the season goes on.
In regards to being comfortable, I mean, it also goes back to the rotation again. I think you have to, if you're trying to get Greg going, I mean, at some point, do you look at those at who he's playing with, those guards, and say, you know, Andre Miller is going to be able to get Greg started better than Steve Blake? And just as a caveat, I don't think that's necessarily true. But I mean, if the coaching staff comes to the conclusion that, you know, Andre is going to be able to entry pass better than Steve Blake, or is he going to be able to find Greg better or run pick and roll better than Blake does? And I mean, I guess maybe at some point you consider making that change, but I don't know. I'm out of ideas and reasons.
Here's the deal. I mean, I'm looking at the rotation list right now. Brandon Roy is feeling the responsibility of this team losing and the offense not scoring enough, so every time he gets the ball, he's thinking score first. LaMarcus Aldridge is thinking score first because that's his job, and he just got a shiny new contract to do exactly that. Travis Outlaw has always been a score-first player and is not going to feed Greg. Martell Webster just got back on the court, generally gets the ball far out on the perimeter. When he's open, his job is to shoot. Rudy Fernandez has been dribbling around a lot, trying to find a shot, but basically hasn't produced anything in terms of offense. Then you have Andre Miller, who can pass the ball to Greg and has made a couple nice passes to Greg, but is out of his element right now on this team. Steve Blake doesn't handle the ball enough, and they haven't run that two-man game with Blake and Oden, mostly because Blake hasn't been a threat as soon as he puts the ball on the floor, so he's easy to defend. The only two guys left who have played at all are Howard and Prisbilla, and they're the people who come in for Oden.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who's passing him the ball? There's just nobody on this team with that mindset right now. Now, you know, that said, it's not like this is the magic bullet either, because Greg isn't ready to become a number one or even number two offensive option on this team. But he's not going to get any better until the team does decide that this is part of the offense, and our job is setting each other up instead of just making sure that we do what we can to contribute on the scoreboard.
Right, and I guess for me it comes down to when talking about Greg, how do we get back to those 6 minutes against Denver in the preseason? That's what I think about whenever I think of Greg now, is how do we get back to that point where he was coming down the court and looking like no one was going to be able to stop him, if only for 6 minutes. And, you know, I don't know what the difference was in that game, or, you know, if it seemed like it was somewhat of an attitude adjustment for Greg. I don't know if guys were just obviously looking to him more because he had the hot hand. But, you know, how do we get back to there? And, you know, if I think we can figure that out, it would help Brandon Roy, because he wouldn't have to worry about scoring so much. LaMarcus, it would help because, you know, he could maybe get his off of double teams from Greg. You know, and everyone else, it helps because Greg's out there defensively and not fouling out. But I just want to go back there.
You're right. That's the key. That is the key. I mean, if you want to shift this offense, the number one way to do it right now is establish that post presence. Part of it is people being aware of that. The other part of it is Greg actually being able to make a move in the post that looks legitimate, which is iffy from night to night. But if he can provide a threat down there that people respect, that is going to loosen up this offense.
Loosen it up, please, please. Looking at the schedule here, the next couple games, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. San Antonio tomorrow night, I think, is a pretty big game. If the Blazers can win that game tomorrow, I think they get quite a bit of confidence before playing Minnesota on Sunday, then heading out on that trip. It's going to be really interesting to see San Antonio, see how they've changed with the acquisition of Richard Jefferson and a healthy Manu Ginobili and really a healthy Tony Parker. You know, that could be a game, if they can put it together in that game off of, you know, 3 days rest, really, which in the NBA season is, you know, you don't get that very often. If they can put something together, win that game, I think that could be a moment that gives them some of the confidence they need to kind of transition into, you know, the team that we thought they were going to be through these first five games. If not, if they come out and get spanked, or, you know, even if they win a close game at this point, I mean, this team is something. They need a little something to make themselves feel good, because I think, as you mentioned, Dave, you know, I think Brandon Roy is feeling the weight of this team not performing to where people expected them to. I think that Nate McMillan is probably kind of still looking for answers and trying to figure out the right mix of players. And if, you know, if they can get something going in that game on Friday night, I think it gives them something to build on going into the rest of the month, really.
One would hope so, although I think it's going to have to be a pretty convincing win to do that. The upside is San Antonio has Utah tonight, so they're coming on the second game of back-to-back against tough opponents. The downside is they present some real defensive matchups that are trouble for us. So at this point, the way the Blazers are playing right now, I'm considering that game somewhat of a coin flip, which is not what I thought I would be considering it, but that's where I am. And really, until we see something more out of the Blazers, it feels like almost every game is a coin flip, and that's the scary part. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, you should be able to pencil in wins against San Antonio, Minnesota, Memphis, Minnesota again at home before you start worrying, or Minnesota at their home, I mean.
Right.
Before you start worrying about New Orleans a week from tomorrow. I mean, you should have a week here of games that you expect to win, and we just don't. It's nervous time on every one, and that's kind of stressful. And I hope the Blazers decide that it's just going to be much easier to go out there and kick some tail and chalk up some of these wins, do exactly what you're supposed to.
Yeah, I think that after that Oklahoma City win, you know, Brandon was saying that, you know, guys in the locker room were like, yeah, you know, we're kind of putting together a little bit, at least from a defensive standpoint. But then they come out lose to Atlanta, and anything that they had kind of worked on in that Oklahoma City game really kind of went out the window. So, you know, I'm of the opinion that it doesn't even have to be a convincing win against San Antonio. Just and I mean, they could win by a point, you know, in a as long as it's not, you know, some kind of, like I said, a fluke shot. I think that, you know, that's something that they can really build on, because that San Antonio team is a good team. And, you know, they, like you said, they're coming off a back-to-back. They lost at Chicago for their one loss so far this season. They've only played three games, so they're still, I mean, every team is an unknown at this point, but having only played three games throughout the first, you know, almost 2 weeks of the season is you know, a little strange, I would say. So, you know, we'll see what we get on Friday.
Part of that confidence, I think, is that, you know, defensively, if you look at just the point totals, the Blazers haven't done too poorly. But their defense hasn't generated any offense for them. That hasn't helped them a bit. And I think to get that confidence and energy, the Blazers really need to see maybe some of those turnovers, some of those blocks and rebounds turning into runouts and easy points and having fun with the game. And San Antonio is a really difficult team to do that against. You know, I guess I don't have a ton of hope for that game being revolutionary in itself. You know, that said, maybe I'm surprised, first of all. And maybe some of those games after against some of those weaker teams just allow you to get out and run, to really dominate, and to feel good about yourself. But, you know, it all comes down to that spark, and that spark is missing right now.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think I agree with you that I don't think San Antonio is really the right team to, you know, start trying to leak out on the fast break. But I think at some point, you know, maybe that's something you consider, as Atlanta does. You know, as soon as that shot goes up on defense, someone just starts running down the court, and you hope that Gray gets the rebound and can hit an outlet, because I mean those are the kind of things that this team needs to improve on, that fast break scoring, those easy buckets. And you know, those are the same problems they've had for, you know, the past 3-4 years. And you know, at some point, maybe you try a little unconventional, you know, offense. When, you know, I know Nate's really not much for sending, you know, four guys to the boards instead of five guys, but hey, you gotta do something, right?
With Oden out there, you don't have to worry anymore. I mean, that's one of the great points of his game. It's a tragedy that he's only averaging 23 points a game. If he could average 36 and you project, I know it's dangerous to project, but add half again onto all his stats, I mean, 10 points and 12 rebounds and 3 blocks a game, I mean, wow. I mean, he's doing very well at what he does when he's on the floor. So I think Greg Oden allows you that luxury. Just vacuum up those rebounds, make the outlet pass, have one of the wings leak out. Unless you can keep Oden out there, and unless everybody has confidence that that's going to happen, it's just not a viable strategy.
Absolutely. Well, I think for the most part, Dave, I think we covered what we wanted to cover on today's podcast. We're sitting at 42 minutes right now, so let's do our little wrap-up thing here. What you got going on at Blazers Edge?
Well, mostly I'm on the previews, game day thread, recap, analysis treadmill. Ben's been having some great charts and stuff for various specific analysis of various parts of the game. He's been talking about the rotations and stuff, of course, which we've been talking about. People are all abuzz and Twitter and aghast in some ways about the start, so there's a lot of great conversation there. But, you know, I think if I had one prediction to make, it's when we do this podcast next week, things will be a lot happier.
I hope so, Dave. I agree. I think that there's a really good opportunity for that. But yeah, it's really, I don't know, everyone's all kind of bumped out right now, and I don't necessarily blame them, you know. But you know, once you start following the team for a while and you kind of get into the groove of the season and you're familiar with it, you know, you kind of realize that five game stretches are really a blink of the eye when it comes to the NBA, and you know, there's still plenty of time to get things back on the right track. But if they can do it, you know, in the not too distant future.
And nobody wins or loses the division or a playoff series in October.
Absolutely.
So what things are going on at Center Court Blog?
Center Court. Like I said, we wrote a thing yesterday about, you know, kind of the team waiting on a big moment to happen. Going to go out to practice today and talk to Nate and a few of the players about, you know, whether or not they're really having fun so far this season and how they can get to a point where they're having a good time. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with just winning and playing well. But, you know, even in those wins, it didn't seem like, you know, guys were having fun. So I want to kind of delve into that a little bit. Sooner, I said it last week and I thought it was going to be done, but obviously it hasn't been out there yet. But we will have our 40 player ranker out here sometime in the not too distant future, I would hope. I did my part. I'm just waiting for the other guys to finish up their parts. Tonight is the Harvest Dinner here at the Rose Garden, where we host people in need, give them some meals, haircuts, flu vaccinations. I think we might have some dentistry as well, eyeglasses, things like that. So you know, so I'll be doing that. I'll be out delivering meals today with Patty Mills, so we'll have a little something from that. And yeah, just kind of the same boat as you. Previews, recaps, and just kind of trying to keep the boat afloat. So that's about all I got going on.
Well, that's plenty.
Yeah, it is plenty.
Keep you busy.
Absolutely. Well, I think we'll leave it at that. We appreciate everybody listening. I know that I appreciate, and I'm sure David does as well. If you got any good name suggestions out there, people, you know, I'm all ears. I know that Dave came up with Quip City when we were first starting this thing, which I always liked. It never really picked up, though, so maybe we'll revisit the Quip City.
I'd forgotten that.
I think about that all the time. That's what that to me is one of the more clever takes on a kind of a well-known saying, which obviously is Rip City, that I've heard. I'm surprised no one's ever used it before, actually. I'm afraid that now that I just said it, that someone else will pick it up. So patent pending on that. That's Dave's intellectual property, so don't steal it.
Yeah, I pretty much think people are going to destroy me on that one.
That's a great name, Quip City. That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll leave it up to the good folks at Laser's Edge to determine. Huh?
We will. We will.
If that's good.
All right, everybody. For Dave Deckert, I'm Casey Holdall. Once again, we appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.